Welcome back to episode 3 of the So OCD podcast. This week, we're going to talk about two things that have strongly impacted both my worldview and my view of myself, as well as my faith. Number one is obvious, OCD. And number two is something you might have heard of already, the Enneagram. The Enneagram seems like it's everywhere right now, but that could also just be that I've been studying it for a while and it's in my sphere of interests and people I follow, but maybe you've heard of it too. Well, today I'm going to talk about my particular type and what's called my Enneagram number and how it has shaped the way I look at and process the fears, doubts, and anxiety that accompany having OCD. I'm still very much a student of the Enneagram and of mental health, so please keep that in mind as you listen. I'm also a little bit under the weather right now, so forgive my voice. But as always, this podcast is simply one person's experience and perspective, so thank you for listening, and let's jump in. The Enneagram often gets miscategorized as merely a personality test, something like Myers-Briggs, but it's much, much more than that, and it has deep roots in a number of Eastern cultures. In recent years, it has taken on a more religious connotation, and Christians in the West, like me, seem particularly drawn to it as a way to see themselves in their truest form, how God created them to be, and how studying their dominant type can help them embrace this design, and as a result, have a deeper connection with God. I first heard about the Enneagram on Annie F. Down's podcast, That Sounds Fun. I don't know if you know who she is. She's an author, speaker, fellow Christian, and she's incredible. She's funny, she's bright, she's a really great interviewer, and she's also a dominant type 7. So 7s are known as being really super fun, which makes sense. And she talks about the Enneagram on pretty much every episode. She always asks her guests, who are usually her friends, what their number is so that they can kind of have a conversation about that. So I was used to hearing about the Enneagram on her podcast, and eventually I just looked it up for myself. So here's a basic intro to the Enneagram if you've never heard of it or you've heard of it but you don't really know much about it. There are 9 dominant types, and each one has a specific set of core fears and desires. So think, if you were to picture the Enneagram, think about it like a clock face, with 1 falling where it would normally fall on the clock, and all the numbers going around clockwise until you reach 9 at the top. Each person has a dominant type, and most people have at least 1 wing number. So if you're looking at the clock face, your wing number is going to be one of the 2 numbers that would fall on each side of your dominant type. For example, I am a 1, so my wing numbers would either be 9 or 2. Another thing to note about the Enneagram is that if you were to take the test or to go study all of the types, you're going to see a bit of yourself in every single one of them. And that's why whatever number you have is called your dominant type, because it's, you know, the one that you most connect with, because you're going to connect with all of them. And for me, that was kind of a struggle. So I couldn't figure out which number I was for a long time. I would take the test and I would get either 1, 2, or 9. I thought that I was a type 9. 9s are known as peacemakers, and anyone who knows me will tell you how much I hate conflict, and I talked a little bit about that on the first episode. 9s are more likely to be introverts with a strong love of nature, being at home. Their core fears are of loss and separation, particularly from loved ones and community, and their basic desire is to have inner stability or peace of mind. I completely connect with this. I have a highly active imagination as well as OCD, and I strive for inner peace constantly. I'm always looking for ways to alleviate tension or strife, if it exists, in my home, in my relationships, and even in the relationships of other people. I'm also an introvert who thrives on intimacy and the aesthetic comfort of being at home or being outdoors in a place that's beautiful. But when I would take the test, I was always looking at a 9 and trying to make myself fit into that dominant type, because the core fear of loss and separation didn't really resonate with me as much as when I looked at the type 1. 1s are known as reformers, or more accurately, perfectionists. They're highly principled, self-controlled, and have a strong sense of morality or right and wrong. Our basic fears are, surprise, surprise, being evil or corrupt, and our core desire is to be good and to live with integrity. When I finally studied this, I thought, okay, I can't really avoid this anymore. I am a 1, I am a perfectionist, but I didn't want to embrace that label because I thought, that sounds so rigid. It sounds so uptight. And to be honest, you know, that's something that I have been called in my life because I grew up in a Christian home. Both of my parents were incredible. My mom's relationship with God was a little bit more growing. I think she was less certain about some things. She was definitely more progressive in her political ideology than my dad was. He's very conservative. He became a Christian around the time that I was born. And so even though my upbringing was so much fun and my parents were amazing, there was also a lot of strict rules there from my father because he cared deeply about, you know, the choices that we made, as every parent does. But also he had a very strict idea of what right and wrong looked like. It was very legalistic. And that was driven by scripture. And I'm grateful for that because I grew up with a faith that's very strong. And there have been a lot of things in my life that I have avoided. A lot of heartbreak, a lot of pain, and a lot of suffering that I have avoided in my own personal experiences because I chose to live my life in a way that honored the rules that my dad set in place. Now that I've gotten a little bit older, I've seen how some of that legalism that I embraced from my church upbringing and from home made it difficult for me to really embrace the way that God designed me to be. And that's something that I found was really interesting when I was looking at the type 1 description on the Enneagram Institute's website. It says, quote, "In the effort to stay true to their principles, ones resist being affected by their instinctual drives, consciously not giving in to them or expressing them too freely. The result is a personality type that has problems with repression, resistance, and aggression. They're usually seen by others as highly self-controlled, even rigid, although this is not how ones experience themselves." And I'm going to pause here for just a second on this quote, because when I read that, I thought, yes, that's so true. You know, I have always viewed myself as this really passionate person who loves art and nature and sexuality. You know, I mean, I was a virgin until I got married, and that's something that I've written about a lot on my blog and in other writings. It's not a surprise to anyone who's familiar with my work or who knows me well. But there were things about my life that I really wanted to embrace and things that I thought were beautiful. I didn't want to have sex before I got married, but I wanted to embrace my body and my own sexuality in a way that was healthy. I wanted to embrace the beauty of the world, even if it didn't necessarily line up with my values. But I always struggled with that because I thought, I don't know how to do this without breaking the rules. And the thing about having OCD that's been so interesting for me is that it has opened up my mind and has opened up my heart to scripture in a whole new way, where I have recognized more of what God's character is about. And that it's not about the law, that Jesus came and said, I am giving you a new covenant. He fulfilled the law, so the law mattered, but he created a new covenant for people after his death and resurrection. He said, I am the new covenant. The standard for us now is not the law, it's Jesus. And Jesus said the two new commandments that he was giving us were to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And that all the other commandments hang on those two. So basically, if you get those two things right, you're covered. Because if you're asking yourself, as my pastor Andy Stanley says, what does love require of me in this moment? Well, then you're probably going to make what would be the morally right choice. The rest of the quote reads, "It seems to ones that they are sitting on a cauldron of passions and desires, and that they had better keep the lid on, lest they and everyone else around them regret it." And that just floored me. It completely floored me when I read it. I could not deny that that was exactly who I was. I was a one. I have a very strong 9 wing, so I am a 1 wing 9, is how you would say it. I'm definitely a peacemaker. But the thing that convinced me was because my core desire and my core fear, they hit that right on the head as a 1. I love for there to be peace in my life. But a lot of my desire for peace has come from my desire to be right. I want to fix things because I think there's a right way for things to be, not just because I don't like conflict. So that was really what led me to start studying the one and embracing that as my type. And the interesting thing I think about being a one and having OCD is that there's actually a stereotype that ones have OCD. or that people with OCD are more likely to be a dominant type 1. And since I fall into both of those categories, I can't really argue with that, but I don't really know a lot of other ones. It turns out that my husband is a 1. He's a very healthy, what we would call integrated 1. So he's very integrated with himself and with God, which was not surprising to find out that he was a 1, but we are so different in the way that we process things. Sometimes we're both introverts, but I am very much a feeler. Let me talk this out. Let me work through this. What about this? Asking all of these questions. And my husband is just very straightforward. Here's the answer. We're going to move forward with it. But I don't really know any other ones besides my husband. So if you have OCD and you're also interested in the Enneagram, I would love for you to take the test on the Enneagram Institute's website and let me know on Instagram or leave a review or send me an email and let me know what you have found out, because I'm not a big fan of stereotypes. I think that, you know, especially when it comes to having mental illness, we can get boxed in to thinking something. And that's something we also have to be careful about when we're doing any kind of study for the Enneagram. We have to be careful about saying, oh, that's just my type coming out. I think that there's a really beautiful thing about embracing who you are and embracing how God designed you and saying, oh, now I understand. I understand why I'm doing that, because that's my core fear. That's my core desire. That's this thing coming out in me. And learning to live in a way that both honors your type, but also doesn't allow those things to always make the decision for you, so to speak. It's recognizing where those things are coming from and saying, oh, that's either a healthy choice based on that, or that's not a healthy choice based on that. Even if you're not a Christian, again, this is something that Christians have sort of co-opted, I think. Not in a negative way, but we have just sort of said, oh, hey, this helps us understand the way that we're wired. And that's important for us to not think that we all have to be uniform Christians and exactly alike all the time. So how can we embrace that? But the Enneagram is definitely something for everyone, I think, across the world, which is why it has such deep roots. And if you're interested in doing that, I would suggest that you take the test on the Enneagram Institute's website. I believe it's just enneagraminstitute.com, but I'm going to have links to all the things that I mentioned here in the show notes if you want to go check it out. It is $12 to take the test because it's the legit one, and it gives you so much detail about it. I've taken it, two or three times, and it's pretty long. It's 140 questions, I believe, and there are other websites that offer abbreviated versions of the test, so I think you'll get a pretty good picture, but it might take a couple of times to study the types, start to get yourself, read a couple books, and figure out who you are, what your type is. Another website that you can look at is yourenneagramcoach.com. Again, a lot of these are coming from a Christian perspective. So I'm also going to link some other ones that are more like the Enneagram Institute, which is not. It's just very much about the Enneagram. But yourenneagramcoach.com, she's a Christian and she looks at it from that perspective, but she's really brilliant. She also has a great Instagram account where she posts about this stuff constantly. Let's see what else. Two books that I really love are, the first one is The Road Back to You by Ian Morgan Cron, and this is a very good intro to the Enneagram if you're just getting started. The Sacred Enneagram, which is a book by Chris Huerwitz, he studied underneath Father Richard Rohr, who has basically been an expert in the Enneagram for a few decades. Again, all of this is from a faith-based perspective, but the Sacred Enneagram is a much deeper dive. I went through that book with my Bible study, and it was very heavy. It was very dense. There's a lot to study because, again, this is not just a personality test. It is so much more than that. And it was wonderful. We loved it, but it was heavy. It was kind of hard. So I would suggest, if you're interested in looking at it from a faith-based perspective, you could start with Ian's book first and then move on to Chris's book. But again, I'm going to link some other things down below if you're not interested in coming at it from that perspective. So what led me to want to talk about this on the podcast is, again, the idea that type 1s have OCD. Or that people with OCD are more likely to be a type 1. It's that, which came first, the chicken or the egg kind of question. Did my OCD influence my personality type? Was this, you know, the way that I was born and it just influenced who I am along with my upbringing? Or, you know, was this my personality type already? And because I was so driven by this idea of making all of the right choices and performing well, it triggered OCD? I don't really know. I think about what we know of OCD as being probably both biological and environmental, a mixture of those two factors. And since no one has really nailed down an actual reason for having OCD, an actual, when I say reason, there's many, many reasons, but no one has pinned down an actual, here is what happens that causes OCD. It's a variety of things. That's all that we know. So I'm really curious to see that because, you know, growing up in my home, growing up in church, really, really caring a lot about morality and about getting things right and really beating myself up when I didn't get things correct, so to speak, according to the worldview that I was taught, was difficult for me. I never wanted to let anybody down. And this is where the nine wing comes in. I didn't want to let anybody down. I didn't want to hurt anybody. I didn't want conflict. And so even while, especially as a teenager, I was very outspoken and very opinionated, if I thought I had hurt someone's feelings, it would break me. And oh my gosh, are we okay? You know, again, as I've discussed before, I would just obsess over it until I had made sure that everything was right because I didn't want to be seen as bad, which is very much the type one's core fear. So I'm not really sure which came first, but I do know that having OCD has actually calmed down a lot of my fear. Now, let me explain what I mean when I say that. Having OCD was the thing that made me, after a few years of going through it, it's the thing that made me recognize that I wasn't any better than anybody else. That my sense of morality and right and wrong, while it still remained largely the same and still remains largely the same as it was when I was younger, I see God and I see the world and people through a totally different filter now because instead of looking at them as, okay, you're not living up to my standard, now because I have OCD and I've struggled with something so much, it's given me a much greater sense of compassion for people's struggles because maybe I don't have your same struggle. Maybe that's not where I've been and I don't understand it, but I have empathy for it. I can look at you and go, I don't understand what that particular struggle is like, but man, I know what it's like to struggle. And I know what it's like to be in your head and to keep doing things that you so desperately don't want to do anymore. What is the verse from Paul in the New Testament where he says, basically, I do the things that I don't want to do and I don't do the things that I do want to do. And it's so frustrating. I mean, that's the human condition. And again, as a type one for so long, I think people looked at me and I looked at myself as I had to be rigid. I had to be uptight because if I wasn't careful, then I would completely fall apart, you know? And I think living by a system like that is not sustainable. It's not sustainable and it's not healthy. And it certainly doesn't give us an accurate reflection of God's heart for us and his love for us and the personal nature of who he is. The way that he made himself a human and came down to earth and redeemed our bodies. You know, that's the thing is that he could have come down in any form, but he came down in the form of a human body. And so Jesus redeemed whatever had gone wrong in that situation. He redeemed our bodies. And I think I grew up with this mindset, this evangelical mindset that the body is inherently evil. And yes, we're flawed. And yes, we do things that are terrible. We choose to do things that are terrible with our bodies sometimes. But the reality is that our bodies are good. When God created us, he created us good. And that means that we are good. Our minds are good. Our bodies are good. And we can trust the things that God has given us. We can trust our judgment sometimes. We can trust our consciousness. We can trust our ability to think and rationalize. It doesn't mean that we're right all the time, and it doesn't mean that we're not going to make mistakes because we're not God, but I think that God gave us these gifts, and God gave me my mind. And whether or not I was born with OCD as a biological condition or it was triggered by being a type one, it's actually the thing that has taught me that about God. It's actually the thing that has opened me up more to be able to do the thing that God actually commanded of me, which is to love him and to love others as myself. Because now I can look at them as fellow human beings and say, man, I know what that is like. I might not know your struggle, but I sure do know what pain is. So studying the Enneagram has just been a lot of fun for me. It has been a lot of hard work too. I think once you start kind of going down the rabbit trail of figuring out your type and your wing numbers, you might meet someone else with your same type and they might be completely different. I have a lot of sixes in my life. I know that six is the most common type, but I have six sixes in my life and they're very close to me. and every single one of them is so different from the other. But a six's core fear is a loss of security. And so they love to ask questions. They like to get second opinions. They like to get confirmation for things because they don't always trust their own judgment. And so maybe that's why I'm surrounded by them, because as a one, I'm always the first to go, excuse me, I know the answer. Even if I don't necessarily know the answer, I think I know the answer and I'm going to tell you. So I'm interested to see how many other type ones have struggled with having OCD, or how many people with OCD take the test and realize that one is their dominant type, or even maybe an eight, because eights are also very strong-willed, opinionated, very, very much. They're not necessarily concerned with morality in the same way that ones are, but they are very outspoken. So I think that it's interesting, because not everybody who has OCD is going to be like that. If you decide to take the test, I would love to hear from you. And I would love to hear your thoughts on today's episode, your thoughts on OCD and the Enneagram, or how personality affects OCD, how OCD affects our personalities, and any other thoughts that you might have, because this is just something that I've been thinking about and I wanted to talk about it a little bit out loud. Thank you so much for listening today. I'm so glad that you guys are here. I have to tell you before we go that after episode 2, I received so many messages from people thanking me for sharing my story. And I'm going to try not to get emotional, but it was very emotional for me to get those, because putting that story out there was really, really difficult. There were a lot of details in the story that I have not shared in a way that's public. And so getting feedback from people who said, you said things that I have thought and been afraid to say out loud, is just mind-boggling to me. I would have given anything to hear a podcast like that when I was first dealing with OCD. And so knowing that I am putting this stuff out there and that it's resonating with you guys, and that it means something to you, and that it's helping you in some way, is just a really beautiful thing. So I want to thank you for listening, and I want to thank you for sharing. Thank you guys for leaving reviews. There are a lot of great reviews on iTunes right now, and you guys have got us really close to the top when it comes to some of the podcasts on mental health, and that just completely blows me away. So thank you so much for listening and for enjoying the show. Thank you for being here and being patient with me. I know this episode's a little bit late this week. I am pregnant with our second child. He's due in 2 months. It's been a little bit of a chaotic week, and because I produced this show on my own, I kind of got a little sidetracked. So thank you for your patience. Thank you for being here. I'm going to link all of the things that I mentioned, the Enneagram websites, as well as the books and some other resources, in the show notes if you're interested. And I would love for you guys to check those out and let me know what you think. Thanks again for being here, and we will see you next time.